Yo, podcast listeners, today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Clean Cut Meals. The yo is in reference to my Instagram story, so if you are on my Instagram, that will make sense. Clean Cut Meals offer a professional meal prep service and have various plans to suit your specific goals. They also change up their menus every week so you never get bored and can help you stay on track long term. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know I'm a big fan of using nutritional strategies that fit into your lifestyle and schedule that includes food that you enjoy and in alignment with your specific goals. So if you're short on time or you're just looking to get the time back from shopping, cooking, preparing and cleaning up after meals, then definitely go check the guys out. Clean Cut Meals helped me with all my nutritional needs in the lead up to running 250 kilometers to the Sahara Desert in April, and they'll be supporting me in my next challenge coming early next year. A little bit more on that at the very end of today's podcast. To get 20% off all first-time orders, go to cleancutmeals.ie and enter the podcast code BKF at the checkout. That's BKF at the checkout for 20% off all first-time orders. If you have any other questions, you can just fire the lads over an email too. Now, let's rock with this week's episode.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. I'm really excited for today's episode. This is one that I've wanted to record for a while. Similar to how to deal with negative people, the episode, how to stop caring what people think about you. These are episodes that I record that I know I get value back when I listen, because it reaffirms a lot of belief systems that have helped me and support me and moved my life forward and moved the needle in the areas of my life that are important to me forward. And I always get value when I listen back to them. I've got personal favorites, that episode on how to stop caring what people think about you and the episode on how to deal with negative people. In particular, there are two episodes I get value when I re-listen to them, because it just reaffirms belief systems that have helped me. I feel this is going to be another one of those episodes, and I think I may need to break it into two parts, because as I went through it, I realized there's a lot more in this that I think one episode can take. So basically, I have a folder in my phone in an Evernote file, which is like notes on the Apple Notes on your phone, but it's just a paid app that allows you to store a little bit more information and is a little bit easier to navigate. And I make notes of questions that come in regularly into my own mind, into my own head, and that I come back to and look at frequently. So one of my mentors used to tell me that smart people have great answers and geniuses have great questions. And for me, my entire life changes based on the questions that I ask myself, particularly the open-ended ones, the ones that regularly change as I come back and answer them over time. I love the story about Albert Einstein, who created E equals MC squared and won the Nobel Prize. But he used to be a teacher at Princeton. And about 3 years into his teaching term, all the other lecturers and professors came to him and were like, "Albert, the kids are on to you. Look, you're given the same exam question at the end of every semester and they're on to you. They know exactly now what question is coming up." And he goes, "You got to change your system." And he said, "No, I'm not changing it." And he was like, "Why?" He's like, "The kids know exactly what question's coming up." And he goes, "The question stays the same, but the answers are always changing." And such an amazing answer for higher level thinking. But it's true, because how you answer a question today will be very different from how you answer it in 6 months, because your priorities will change, your life experience will change. You may have consumed a piece of information that gave you a eureka moment that changed the trajectory of your life completely. So those questions change. One of the reasons that I reread my favorite books, Poor Charlie's Almanac by Charlie Munger, Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman, Mastery by Robert Greene, Seneca, The Letters from a Stoic, or Marcus Aurelius' Meditations, the reason I reread my favorites is because I get something different from them each time I read them. That's why a lot of people that read my book, The Fitness Mindset, they're like, "I'm going to reread this, the mindset section in particular, because it's very applicable to a lot of areas in life." And I love hearing that, because you're going to get a different message in 3 months' time than you did the first time you read that, because your life's in a different area. Your questions are very, very similar. The questions you ask yourself, the questions don't need to change because the answers are always changing. So one of the reasons I come back to it so regularly is because I'm able to see it from a different vantage point. And when I think of a new question, I normally add it to my folder on my phone, so I have all of them here, the ones that I come back to regularly. And when I'm feeling a bit stuck, or if I'm feeling that I'm not progressing in an area of my life, and I break my life into four quadrants: health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. And they're kind of my targets for what I'm trying to achieve in my life, because I know I'm happy when I'm succeeding in those areas: my health, my physical health, my mental health, my wealth, my bank account, my love, my physical relationships or romantic relationships, my familial relationships, my personal relationships with my inner circle, and my fulfillment, my jumping out of bed every day, using the talent that I've been given to help serve the world in whatever way that I can. Those quadrants work as navigation for what it is that I'm trying to achieve in terms of my own personal fulfillment and happiness in life in general. And generally, happiness comes when what you have to offer the world merges with what the world needs. And I try and stay on top of that regularly. And one of the ways that I do that is asking myself the right questions. And it moves me out of that sticking point, because we all get stuck, or we all get a plateau where our health isn't moving. Our fat loss has plateaued, or we're gone on 10 Tinder dates and they've all gone terrible and it feels like you're never going to find somebody, or you're into your bank overdraft for the third time that month and you're wondering why or when am I going to be able to get my finances set, or your ladder's against the wrong wall where you're working a job that you don't feel that inspired for and you're questioning, can I do this for the rest of my life? If this is the only job I get for the rest of my life, can I really stick with it? And those questions are powerful, and coming back to them regularly can make you unstuck, or in my experience have made me unstuck, because we all get those setbacks. You just don't see it. We're in a very, very shallow world of, say, social media, where you'll see the tip of someone's iceberg and you won't see what's going on in their demons in their head. You won't see the parts of their life that they're struggling in, because not everyone shares it. You know, my life is basically an open book, and I try and share it on the podcast because I'm aware my mess becomes my message, and I gave up giving a shit what people thought about me a long time ago, and that allows me to put out what's in my head and project it either into the written word for a book or put it onto a podcast in audio. And that's the reason that I record them. It moves my fulfillment level up because it's stuff I needed to hear. And generally, the podcast episodes that help people the most are the ones that I'm speaking to myself in. You know, how to stop caring what people think about you, how to deal with negative people, how to make better decisions, how to stop being impulsive. Things that all support me now, but would have been life-changing and game-changing for me 5 years ago or 10 years ago. So that's why I record them, because it moves that area of my life from a selfish standpoint. It moves my fulfillment higher because I want the world to be better because I was here, and it makes me feel good. And helping people and serving people is the greatest currency in the world. When you have impact, you'll have income. But if you gave me the choice, it's impact every day, because you get to an area of your life. I'm very, very fortunate with finances that you just never really have to worry about. I'm in a position that I probably will never have to worry about money again. And that comes down to learning how money works. It's the same as I'll never be out of shape, provided that I don't get a catastrophic injury, because I just know and have the skills and tools to how to train and how to eat. Finance is the exact same. You learn the language of money. You learn how to make money work for you. Like, I had to go broke 3 times to get that. One of the reasons that I'm so grateful for my couch story, which, for those of you new to the podcast, when I was trying to get my personal training business off the ground first, I failed 3 times. It took me 3 attempts. But on one particular occasion, I was renting a gym in London and had completely drained my bank account to zero and had to get money for the bus and go down the back of my couch about 7 years ago and go down the back of my couch for money for the bus so that I could get to the bank so I could get an overdraft to pay my rent. One of the reasons that I'm so good with money and finances now, was using that failure as feedback. And when you get to that point where you have a nearly a physiological response when you think about that circumstance and it hits you hard about how shit you felt about yourself and how my self-worth was at a zero. I was so embarrassed. I was going out with a girl, an amazing girl. And I didn't tell her at the time. I had friends that I was pretty close with. I didn't tell any of them because I was embarrassed and my self-worth was at a zero. And I use that now because it's a reminder of how things were and to never let it go back that way. And sometimes you have to hit that pain point before you really make change. Good is the death of grace, but yeah, I'm okay. Or yeah, it's fine. That'll really fuck you up. Because when I ask you a question on how's your health, how's your wealth, how's your love, how's your fulfillment, and you go, yeah, it's okay, it's fine, you're never going to move. Because you need to hit a pain point where you're like, it's fucking shit. I hate my job. I hate my relationship. I hate my health and how it is right now. That's a pain point that generally is a catalyst for change. And that's why I would never look at it as a poor thing, because sometimes you have to hit your wit's end before you make that change. I had mine in finances. I had mine in health. I was sick as a teenager. I've had mine in relationships where I was sick of the casual encounters that were coming so frequent through my 20s. You hit pain points. My fulfillment, I had it with my job where even though I enjoy teaching, it wasn't my life's passion. I felt I had other talents that would help people better on a larger scale. I didn't know what that looked like, but I just knew my compass was pointing in a different direction. Again, it manifested itself in podcasts and books and different things, speaking, but I didn't know at the time. Sometimes you have to take the first step and trust and have faith that it will open up, and it nearly always does. But they all came off the back of pain points where you can only take so much before you go, fuck this, I need to change. So be very, very aware if your answer is, yeah, it's okay, or yeah, I'm fine, yeah, my relationship is okay, or my health is fine, or my fulfillment, my job is decent, you'll never change with that. And that's not one of my questions, but it is a good one to ask. If that's what you're answering and that's your response, you have to realize that you're going to compound that effect over time. And one of the movies that I didn't like the first time I saw it, but if you've ever seen the Adam Sandler movie Click, where he has a remote control that fast forwards his life, and every part of his life that he fast forwards, it automatically skips in terms of he didn't want to make love with his wife one night and he fast forwarded it. So for the rest of his life, every time they were making love, it automatically skipped. He didn't want to work a deadline at one stage because it was going to take too much time. So he fast forward and it skipped him to the end of the deadline. And then every time he had a deadline, it would skip him forward. And before he knew it, his life was over because it had compounded and he went on autopilot during those times. I didn't get that movie first, and I actually didn't like it at all because I didn't think it was that funny. But when I watched it back recently, I was like, Jesus, that book is the compound effect. That book is the snowball effect. That movie is a compound effect. That movie is about habits, because when we go on automatic and we go on autopilot, when we fast forward things, which is the metaphor for the movie, we realize that what we do every day decides who we become. And I'm a big believer in that you don't decide your future, you decide your habits, and your habits decide your future. And asking yourself the right questions over time and changing when you need to and not settling for mediocrity, which is one of my questions, which will probably be in part two, not settling for average, not working to your quota, working to your potential. All these questions you ask yourself, are you dropping your standards? Are you just being mediocre because you want to settle? Are you afraid to put in the work? All of these questions are important. So I'm going to free flow. I've written the points and the questions, and then I'm literally just going to free flow everything else. So bear with me if I jump back and forth, because these episodes, I tend to just go with first thought that comes, and I expand and flesh them out. I'm going to break it into two parts because there's quite a lot here. And I also think that it will serve better as a two-part episode because I don't want to rush through things and I'm just going to go with the flow. Again, this, I might be done in 10 minutes, but unlikely because I don't really do rapid fire that well. So I hope you get a lot of benefit from it. This is just kind of an introduction to it. The questions that I ask myself, I'm going to title the episode something along those lines. These are questions directly from my phone. They're from the Evernote in my phone and I come back to regularly. So I'm going to structure this as asking the question and then fleshing it out. So I hope you get a lot of value from it. So the first question that I regularly ask myself is, am I being emotional or rational right now? And this question was born out of my natural tendency to lean towards being very impulsive and making rash decisions that don't move my life forward. And to be honest, it's something that if I kept doing and not having the self-awareness to realize that it was affecting me so negatively, I would have just kept doing it without even realizing it. And the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And my automatic tendency is to lean towards being emotional versus being rational. I'll lead with impulsivity. And a lot of people will resonate, and hopefully you resonate with the fact that when you make decisions out of emotion, you tend to make bad decisions. And I spoke about this briefly in last week's episode about how to make better decisions or how to stop making bad decisions and the difference between being emotional and being rational. And that when you're able to separate how you're feeling right now from the actual situation and you're able to see the forest amongst the trees, that can give you an operational manual for your life on making better decisions going forward. I know myself that every fucking bad decision, and one of the things that can catch you in life is everything you do can be a good idea at that moment in time. You know, we've all made those decisions and in nightclubs when we wake up the next morning and go, fuck, that was a good decision last night, but not a good decision now. Or we've had that extra drink, or we've made that food choice and feel sick the next day. We're like, well, that was a good decision at the time. It's what I wanted, but man, I feel sick now. When you're able to disconnect yourself from the emotion of the decisions you make, it can allow you to make significantly better choices. So the question I ask myself is, how am I being emotional or rational right now? And what would happen with me was when I was in an argument with somebody or I was trying to get my point across in either a romantic relationship or with someone in my inner circle or just somebody in general, and I would get heated and I would feel this flare up build within me, and then I'd be like, well, fuck you. And that would be generally my reaction, and that's how I would end the conversation. And that never supported me. And Tony Robbins has a great philosophy that you can be happy or you can be right. And a lot of the time when you're having an argument with somebody, either in a romantic relationship or a friend or just a colleague at work, and you're getting emotional and realizing that you have an opinion, which is all you really have, and you're arguing an opinion, it makes you step back a little bit and realize that you're just not being rational right now. Because everything we have is an opinion and everything we see is a perspective. Everything you have, whether you think vegan is the best diet or keto is the best diet, or you think CrossFit is the best or powerlifting is the best, or you think everybody should be in a romantic relationship or everybody should be polygamous or a monogamous, whatever your belief system is, it's an opinion. That's all you have. There's nothing, with the exception of the laws of physics and the law of thermodynamics, and if you jump off a building, you're probably going to go splat from physics. Everything else is really an opinion, because the updated of things that are updated with science consistently change. One of the examples I use in the mindset section of the fitness mindset is, we once thought the world was flat. We now know what the way the circumference of the world and the way that the moon reflected it, when Aristotle was able to show that the moon was probably spherical and round. We know that now. So every time you think you know something, ask yourself, do I really know this, or is it just an opinion? And then it can disconnect you from that emotion. There's a really good book, even though I didn't get a lot from it because I think I was probably past it by the time I read it, and I had read other psychological texts that had supported me more. It's The Chimp Paradox, where your monkey brain takes over. Some people call it the reptilian brain. Some people call it the Labrador brain. Some people call it the chimp brain. It's the part of your brain that hasn't been evolved over years and years. Your prefrontal cortex, the part of your brain that has evolved to make rational decisions, that has evolved to be able to visualize and see the future, that part of your brain is highly evolved in human species. It's why we're top of the food chain, because of that overdevelopment. And that allows us to make rational decisions. But that isn't always in control. Sometimes your chimp brain jumps in. Sometimes your reptilian brain jumps in. That, you know, fight, fucking flee is all reptilian. It's all chimp. So when you get that physical response and that emotion, we're like, man, I just want to fuck that girl or hook up with that guy. That's reptilian. When that those emotions drive, it's physiology that's been evolved over years and years and years, and it's hardwired in your DNA. When you want to just punch somebody in the face because you feel jealous or you're angry at what they're saying about you, that's reptilian brain. That's your brain being hijacked, your prefrontal cortex being hijacked by physiology and being hijacked by emotion. You can't make good decisions in that state. When you're in that physiological or physical state, you're going to make bad decisions because you're acting out of rashness and you're acting out of impulsivity. And I've made them. I'm big on systems over willpower. It's one of the reasons that they have the drunk driver campaigns in different countries, where they're like, make sure you have a designated driver, because that's a system over willpower. Otherwise, you're going to the bar when you've got your friends with you at the bar and you have a couple of drinks, you're like, oh, fuck it, I'll drive home, it's fine. Whereas if you have a designated driver, that's using a system over willpower. Bringing a condom with you on a first date is a system over willpower. Otherwise, you're making a rational decision or irrational decision because you're horny, guy and girl, because you don't have a condom. That's having a system over using willpower. That's not using decisions that are based out of emotion, because when you have that physiology and that hardwiring of your reptilian brain or your chimp brain that wants to fuck everything, or that chimp brain or reptilian brain that wants to shout at everybody or punch them in the face, when you're trying to use that to make decisions, it doesn't take a genius to figure out where that's going to go. And this is coming from someone that lived that. I was consistently making decisions based out of emotion because I wasn't able to control that. One way that I hijack it is separating my opinion from everything else and realizing that all I have is an opinion, and that I can't really feel strongly about an opinion, because you should be willing to change your opinion. You know, a closed mind is a terrible thing. And when you do that, and when you start to feel those emotions welling up inside you, either physical or sexual or anger, whatever it is that is, shows up differently for different people. When that emotion starts to well up within you, catch yourself and ask, am I being emotional right now, or am I being rational right now? Donald Trump has a great quote that you can always tell someone to go fuck themselves tomorrow. And that's just the heightened version of sleep on it. If you're feeling a certain way, or you want to tell your boss to fuck off, or you want to hook up with that person because you're feeling really physically attracted to them right now, or you want to quit your job because you're just sick of everybody in the workplace, sleep on it. You can always tell someone to go fuck themselves tomorrow. Ask yourself, are you being emotional? Ask yourself, are you being rational? When that part of your brain starts to calm down, that primitive part of your brain starts to calm down, you can start making decisions from a rational vantage point again. I guarantee, if you make this one change, as someone that has done it for the last 5-6 years, and it's a continuous work in progress, switching from making emotional decisions from making rational decisions can impact every area of your life in a positive way, because you're thinking clearly on the decisions that you're making and the steps that you're taking. Ask yourself, am I being emotional right now? Am I being rational right now? And what's the most logical step that will get me to my end goal the quickest, or will get me to my end goal the most effective way possible? That's why breaking up your life into whatever quadrants or whatever language you want to put on it, and you know the target you're trying to hit, it makes decisions very, very easy. Because if you know that you want to look this way, or you know that you want to have this amount of money in your bank account, or you know you want to have this romantic relationship or this relationship with your father, daughter, mother, son, whatever it is, or you know that you want to have this impact on the world, it makes decision making very, very easy. Because if it doesn't move the needle forward, you don't do it. If it does, you go all in. when you start doing that rationally, consistently over time, it allows you to have a lot more impact and it allows you to move that needle forward. So that's number one. That's the first question and is the one that I have to come back to the most regularly. Again, everyone is different and it will show up differently for each person, but it's the one I come back to regularly because it's the one I've had to deal with personally. The next one is, how do I deserve what I want? So I'm a big believer that to get what you want, you have to deserve what you want. And that can be as simple as having in your mind's eye the version of the person you want to become so that you can have the thing that you want. I spoke in the fitness mindset about the be to have model, that when you become a certain person, you can do a certain thing and you can have what it is you want. Whereas people have a reverse where they think that if I have the nice car, or I have the nice clothes, or I have the body, I can do this and then I can be happy. And it's the reverse. You have to become that person first and then everything comes off the back of that. One of the questions I'll ask myself regularly when I know what my end goal is, if I want to be a millionaire or a multimillionaire by a certain age, how do I deserve that? And then you start to get all these other elements that come back that allow you to fuel that dream. To become a multimillionaire, you need to serve millions of people, or you need to serve a certain demographic of people better than anybody else. That's how you become a millionaire. That's how you become a multimillionaire. That's how you build a business from zero figures to five figures to six to seven. If you want to have an amazing boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife, how do I deserve that? What kind of person do I have to become? So if you want to be have a great partner, it's not how do I get a great partner? It's how do I deserve a great partner? How do I deserve a great boyfriend? How do I deserve a great husband? How do I deserve a great girlfriend? How do I deserve a great wife? You're loyal, committed, communicate your ideas, prioritize, find out what's important to them. Don't shut down. Don't shut out ideas just because you have a different belief system. When you ask these questions and you figure out the person that you need to become to deserve what you want, it makes it significantly easier because it's now in your control. When you're one of the anxieties and stresses that come, and I'm speaking from personal experience, is when we think we have a lack of control in a situation. What this question does is it puts the control back on you. It's not how do I find the perfect girlfriend. It's not how do I find the perfect partner. It's not how do I find the perfect wife. It's how do I deserve the perfect partner? How do I deserve the perfect girlfriend? How do I deserve the perfect wife? Who do you have to become to deserve what you want? It puts it back on you. And when you own it like that and you can control it, you can change it or you can become a better version of you and then you'll get the things that you want. It works for all areas of life. How do I deserve a perfect body or a better body to be healthier? Who do you have to become? What habits do you have to form? What do you have to do every day? Tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. Who do you have to become to deserve what you want? That's a very powerful question that I've used in all areas of my life, some to better effect than others, but it's one I come back to constantly because the answers are always changing. How do I deserve what I want? Next time you think, how do I get my own business? How do I get to six figures? How do I get to be a millionaire? How do I get a perfect boyfriend? How do I get a perfect body? How do I get a perfect girlfriend? How do I get a six pack? How do you deserve those things? Because when you answer that, you start getting the other questions that fuel that ambition. So that's the next one. Number one, how am I being emotional? Am I being emotional or am I being rational right now? Question number two, how do I deserve what I want? Question number three, what makes me happy and what makes me unhappy? And I've spoken in previous podcasts, and this is in the mindset section of the fitness mindset as well. We overcomplicate life massively. Life is very, very simple. It's not easy because life is difficult. Life is hard, but it's simple. Make a list of the things that make you happy. Do more of it. Make a list of the things that make you unhappy and do less of it. Make a list of the people who make you happy. Spend more time with them. Make a list of the people who make you unhappy. Spend less time with them. This is something that I've doubled down on over the years, because I didn't do it that well for a large period of time. And to be honest, a lot of it was just not asking the question. And I'm hoping this episode will work as a catalyst consciously or subconsciously, where you'll start thinking about the things that make you happy. You'll start thinking about the people that make you happy. And you'll start thinking about the things that make you unhappy. And you'll start doing more and spending more time with the people who make you feel full, who don't drain you. And I've spoken in the past about emotional vampires, people who suck your fucking energy from you. And I've spoken about positive energy chargers, people who lift your energy and make you feel better after you talk about them. There's certain things that you'll do that make you happier. There's certain things that you'll do that make you unhappy. And by all means, we can't control it fully. But if you can follow an 80-20 principle, where 80% of your time you're doing things you love with people you love in places you love, and the other 20% of your time is everything else, you're going to be significantly happier. I've made a list, and in my bedroom I've got a whiteboard, and if you want to see it, let me know and I'll post it on my Instagram. Just hit me up on DM or hit me up on, tag me on the story, or even better, comment under this post on Instagram and I'll happily put it up. I have a list of my daily layout, so my perfect day, how I want my perfect weekday to look. And beside that, there's bullet points of all the things that make me happy. If there's some simple stuff in there, and there's some stuff in there that's a little bit more complex. I've got things in there like seeing my mom, playing with my daughter. Then there's other things in there like eating quality food that gives me energy, training, exercising, running is in there. Even though I hate running, I love the psychological edge it gives me every time I do it, because I dislike doing it. And I get a lot of psychological transformation through physical suffering, because I fucking hate it so much. And running, I'm not built to run. I don't have the biomechanics. But my psychological edge, because I'd lift weights all day and I would do circuits all day. I love it. I even love biking. I even love swimming, even though I'm not a very good swimmer. I hate running, but I love the psychological edge it gives me. So it's in there as something that makes me happy because of the reframe that I've given it. Drinking kombucha instead of fizzy drinks is on my list. It's on my bullet points. There's some simple stuff in there. Getting 8 hours of sleep, or 7.5 hours in my case for the REM cycle sleeps. That's all there because those things make me feel happy, or else they fuel my energy, which allow me to do the things that make me feel happy. One thing I haven't done is writing a list of the things that make me unhappy. I'm very aware there's certain people and there's certain things that make me very, very unhappy. There's certain people in my family that I do not like spending time with, so I don't spend time with them. I don't do things I don't want to do. I don't meet people I don't want to meet, and I don't work with people I don't want to work with. I just don't. I'm in a very fortunate position right now that I'm in that I can do that and have that choice. But a little bit is making the decision up front, because money can be a big driver, or social status can be a big driver, and saying yes because you want to die with the most toys is a ridiculous way to live your life. And I did that fucking years. I'm so fortunate the living I make now. I'm so fortunate with how much I've made over the last few years. And I, for a lot of time, would put my self-worth in my net worth, and it wasn't a good way to be, because when you put your external success metric on a number, either a number on a scale or a number on a body fat or a number in a bank account, numbers never end. So you're never going to be happy, because those numbers are consistently and continuously moving forward. And putting your happiness into external things, even though there are certain external things that are out of your control, like people, putting into inanimate or non-living external things, which is something else I did, a new car, nice clothes, new house, all these things I thought would make me happy, and they do temporarily. You get a hedonic adaptation over time. You get a dopamine hit initially, and then the hedonic adaptation where you go back to your baseline happiness point after a certain period of time. They've done studies on people who've won the lottery about their happiness levels and how it sears and spikes incredibly after they win, and then they come back to them 6 months later and they feel the same. That's hedonic adaptation. That's what happens to people. We go back to our relative happiness set point. And what you do every day is going to fuel your happiness. If you can answer the questions, who are the people that make you happy? What are the things that you do that make you happy? Where makes you happy? And why is another one? Because when you can figure out why, it gives you a stronger reason for doing it. It can allow you to double down on the things that make you feel a lot better about yourself and allow you to cut the things that make you unhappy. And it can be as simple as making that choice. Sometimes if you're in that job that you don't like, you have to pay bills. I get it. But you maybe want to be doing something in your spare time, your side hustle that helps get you out of that job long term, into another job or into your own business, whatever it looks like for you. Same in your relationships. Being in a sunk cost fallacy just because you've done something for so long is not a good way to live your life. Staying with somebody that you're miserable with because you've been with them for 5 or 6 years and you're afraid that, well, I'm getting older now or I've invested so much time in this relationship, I can't leave them. That's ludicrous. What you've done in the past doesn't need to be who you are in right now, and it definitely doesn't need to be who you are in the future. Yet, we let the sunk cost fallacy kick in and think that, well, I've invested so much time, energy, or money in this, I can't leave it now. That shouldn't dictate your direction going forward. When you choose to spend more time doing things you're happy doing with the people you're happy doing it with, I swear to you, I promise to you, you'll never regret that. I live a lot of my life by the 97-year-old rule. And for those of you new to the podcast, my 97-year-old rule is I go to my deathbed at 97 years old and I look back and ask myself, would I regret this decision right now? Would I regret spending this extra few hours at work and skipping bringing my daughter to the playground? That's a fucking yes every time. I'm like, well, those emails will answer themselves. I'll answer them on Monday because I may not be able to bring my daughter to the playground again. But otherwise you get sucked into, no, I need to get these emails done. I need to get this program in on time. I need to get whatever job task you have, not realizing that there's a bigger picture and there's things that are more important to you and that you need to value the valuables first. And when you do that, your whole life feels significantly better. And again, I'm not saying that it's a blueprint for you or an operational manual for you, but that 97-year-old rule helps me a lot with my decision-making because it allows me to use my value ladder on what's the most important. And then everything that can seem like it's important day-to-day, which in the grander scheme of things isn't, it allows you to take control of that or take back control of that because your internal compass knows. You know you want to hang out with your loved ones. You know you want to spend more time with your kids or your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your best friend. You know that. Your internal compass tells you that. But you get a work deadline that seems really important right now, or you need get a workout in that you're like, fuck, I need to get that workout in. Really, it's really, really important. Where in the grander scheme, maybe it wasn't that important. Maybe you didn't need to get that workout in. You're going to the gym tomorrow anyway. You can do the workout tomorrow, or you can get that deadline that you needed to get done or that email sent. You can do it on Monday. It's Friday now. Chill out with your family. Whatever that is for you. It looks different for each person. But asking those questions, understanding what your value ladder is, what's at the top of your value ladder. If your job is at the top of your value ladder, awesome. That's no problem at all. If your fitness is at the top of your value ladder, again, when I was competing as a professional fitness model and competitive bodybuilder, my fitness was the top of my value ladder. I'm not proud to say that, but it was. And my friends came second, my family came second, my job came second. Everything else was below that. Fitness was the top because I was trying to excel in that area of my life. And I was obsessed. And obsession is an ingredient for success to a degree, but it does mean it puts a lot of other things on the back burner. And for me, it wasn't the path I wanted to go. I spoke about it in the mindset section of the fitness mindset, that I did the 97-year-old rule. I looked forward and realized that what happens if I get to the top of this world? And I've neglected my family. Holly was just born. It wasn't the life I wanted to lead anymore. So it changed. That question was the same. What was my value ladder? What was important to me? But the answer changed. So doing that regularly, because who you are now is going to be very different in 5 years. It's going to be very different in 10 years. I was recently given my cousin advice. He was filling out his Leaving Cert, which his CEO for his Leaving Cert. For those of you unfamiliar with the Irish educational system, that your Leaving Cert is your end of year. It's the exams that determine what university or college you go to. And your CEO form is basically the form you fill out for what college courses or university courses you want to do. And he was telling me about all these courses that he wanted to do. And he was like, I think I'll like this. And in 4 years' time, there'll be jobs. And the advice I offered him, just to kind of narrow it down and paraphrase it slightly, was don't make decisions right now out of what you're going to be in 4 years. I was like, you don't know if you're going to want to work in that field in 4 years. One, you don't know there's going to be any jobs. We're in a position and a world where things are moving so quickly and so rapidly. You only have to remember that 10 years ago, there was no iPhone. There was literally no, you wouldn't be listening to this. There was no iPhone. There just wasn't. 15 years ago, there was no Facebook. There just wasn't. It wasn't there. And I remember a world pre-internet. Things are changing so rapidly and so quickly now. To make a decision on the next 4 years because you think there'll be jobs in it is one, ludicrous, but also the fact that you're a very different person in 4 years' time. And the piece of advice that, and I saw the light bulb light in his eyes, was I said, what did you want to do 4 years ago? And he was like, what do you mean? I was like, what did you want to do 4 years ago? He was like, oh, I thought I was going to be a teacher. And then I was going to play GA and be a teacher. And I was like, well, what do you want to do now? He goes, I fucking hate teaching. I'm like, well, there you go. I was like, that was 4 years ago. I was like, you're trying to make a decision right now for 4 years from now when you're going to be a very, very different person. And that seemed to land. And that light bulb went off in his head and I saw it. And for me, it's something that I ask myself regularly. And I give myself permission to change your mind. And you should always give yourself permission to change your mind because priorities change. And questions and answers, the answers particularly change. So give yourself permission to change your mind. And not be sunk into the confirmation bias or the consistency bias where you feel that you have to stick to an idea or you have to stick to a path just because you said you would. That's a cognitive bias. That a commitment bias is where we said, oh, well, I've committed so much time into it now, I have to continue going forward. It's the forward version of the sunk cost fallacy. So for example, if you've ever watched a terrible movie that you're like, oh, this movie's so bad, but you're 45 minutes in, you're like, fuck it, I have to see what happens. That's a commitment bias. We have it. It's a cognitive bias that we have in our brain. And when you make decisions, and I do it regularly, where I'm very different now to what I was when I was 25. I'm completely different from the person I was when I was 20. That's going to be even more so when I'm 35. Going even more so when I'm 40. So to make decisions now, and it is important to have that in person in mind of who you want to become and what you want to achieve and have those goals that you're working towards, but realize they may change. Realize priorities may change. Realize that circumstances may change. And the more attached you are to an idea, or worse, how you get there, which is a blueprint for failure, is having an end goal and then being attached to the way you get there. The blueprint for success, in my opinion, that I've used and seen with people much smarter and more successful than me that I've spoken with, is knowing what the end goal is and not being attached to how you get there. That's how you get success in all realms and areas of your life. But give yourself permission to change your mind and realize that you'll be a very, very different person in the next few years. Your value ladder may be very different. The things that are important to you now may not be important to you in 5 years' time. They may not be important to you in 10 years' time. So give yourself permission to change your mind. The reason I tie all of that in this particular question is because the things that make you happy may change, but they don't change that much. The things that have always made me happy, playing sport or working out, hanging out with my friends or family, or now my daughter, things that always made me happy for as long as I can remember, they stay pretty constant. And tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. If you do things 80% of your day, every single day, doing things you love with people you love, you're going to be significantly happier. And the same works on the compound effect on the opposite side. If you're spending time in a job you hate, with people you don't like, in a relationship that you're miserable in, 80% of your time, you're going to be unhappy. That's one of the Picasso's dichotomy of doing a job you hate so that you can spend your free time doing things you love. Which is ludicrous. Spending Monday to Friday, 8 hours a day doing something you fucking hate so you can live for the weekend and have 2 days off that you have to yourself is crazy to do that for the next 50 years, 60 years. Short term, it's fine. And it may be the thing that gets your ladder against the right wall and allows you to monetize or allows you to support financially your family or your side hustle, the thing you do want to do. But doing it for the next 60 years is ludicrous. So ask yourself, what makes you happy? What makes you unhappy? What is the top of your value ladder? And it doesn't matter what that is. It's going to be different for each person. It may be your personal relationship. It may be your kids. It may be your fitness. It may be your business. It may be whatever it is for you. What is the top of your value ladder? Because we will prioritize what's important to us. One of the things that I've given my inner circle permission to ever call me on is I'm not allowed to say I don't have time. Because that's not true. That's fooling myself and I'm the easiest person to fool. It's not true. We do have time. We all have the 24 hours. You just can't prioritize it. Or else we don't have the energy to do all the things we want, which is a different problem. And again, the problem isn't the issue. Lack of identification of a problem is the issue. So if you don't have the energy to do the things you want, that's different. But you do have the time. You're just not prioritizing it. And we'll always prioritize the things that are top of our value ladder. You may not have the time to prioritize your meals, prepping your meals or going to the gym, but you always bring your kids to football practice. That's because your kids are higher in your value ladder to your fitness. You may not be able to get to the gym every day, but you always meet your work deadlines. That's because your job is higher on your value ladder. You may be an absolute wanker to your family and just never give them any time of day, which is something that I've had personal experience with, where you're low on the value ladder. Or your family are low on your value ladder because you're always doing work things or spending time with your friends. That just means there's something different on your value ladder. There's nothing right or wrong with that, but identifying it and then asking yourself, is this what I really want on the top of my ladder? Because you may be doing it automatically. You may not have even consciously been aware of that, that you've neglected your family or you've neglected your fitness until you look in the mirror and see flabs where your body fat is too high, or you've neglected your personal relationships or romantic relationships and wonder why your husband, wife, girlfriend or boyfriend left you. You may not be consciously aware of it. That's why these questions are so important, because they bring conscious awareness to things that we may be doing on automatic. So that's why I would ask them. What makes you happy? What makes you unhappy? What's top of your value ladder? Because you will prioritize and you will do the thing that's top of that ladder, whether you do it consciously or subconsciously, whether it's through habit forming or not, you'll do that. We all do. If you love Love Island or Game of Thrones or watching the football every weekend, you'll prioritize finding time to do that. You will 100% do it because it's important to you. It's priority for you. It's your escapism because you don't like what's going on in the world, or it's your escapism because you do like what's going on in the world and you just need to disconnect from time to time. Self-awareness on it is key. Why you're doing things. I had a season ticket when I lived in London for Arsenal. I could tell you everybody that was in the reserve team because I wasn't happy with my life, and football and soccer was my escapism. It allowed me to escape from the things that I wasn't super happy with. I wasn't particularly happy with the way I was living my life in general. And I used it as an escape. Now I watch football or I watch GAA religiously, but it's structured in as my disconnect time that I'm like, well, this makes me happy. This makes my soul feel better watching the Sunday game. That makes me feel better, so I do it. It's not escapism now. It's a disconnect. And that's, again, another question. Am I disconnecting or am I escaping? And that's something that I'll get onto in the next, in part two, because it ties in a lot with, are you projecting right now? Which is a question I'll come on to. So that's number three. What makes me happy? What makes me unhappy? And then number four, can this person actually help me or change my situation or circumstance? And this is one that I created before I did Marathon de Sable, which is 250 kilometer run through the Sahara Desert over 6 days. And my thought process for this one, and I've kept it since, was if this person can't help me, why the fuck am I complaining to them? And complaining is losing mentality. You're not going to win with anything in life by complaining. And people that complain, the only people that like to listen to you complaining are your fucking loser friends who are complaining about their life. They don't move you forward, and you're not moving yourself forward by complaining about what's going on in your life. Nothing good happens from complaining. That being said, reframing that into, can this person actually help me or change my situation or circumstance, can help. My philosophy was going to Marathon de Sable was I knew I was going to hurt. I was running 250 kilometers through the desert, self-sufficient with my own food on my back. I knew my feet were going to be aching. I knew they were going to be mangled, and they were. They were absolutely destroyed by the end of the 250 kilometers. I knew I was going to be hungry. I knew I was going to be tired because I was sleeping outside on rocks and sand. I knew I was going to be lethargic. I knew I was going to be seeing shit on the long day, the double marathon, the 86 kilometers that took me nearly 24 hours. I was hallucinating. I had lack of food. I was dehydrated. I knew all these things were going to happen. And I could complain about them to everybody and be like, oh man, my feet are sore, I'm tired, or, you know, I'm seeing shit, and complain. But if the person that I was complaining to couldn't help me, what was the point? It was just loser mentality that was putting me into a negative mindset that wasn't going to support the end goal of getting to the finish line. But if something went wrong and I could complain to a medical doctor that could potentially make me feel better, that was different. On day one of Marathon de Sable, there was a mini sandstorm that caught my glasses in my eye, and I lost the sight of my left eye for the first day. I was able to complain to the medical tent, and they were able to put stuff in my eye, and they were able to help me, and that moved me forward. It helped me get to that end goal better. It wasn't a case of complaining for the sake of complaining's sake. It was asking, can this person help me? If yes, then tell them your problem and see can they support you. If not, stop fucking complaining. This is one of my biggest pet peeves in life, is when people complain about their circumstance or situation. You're not a fucking tree. If you don't like where you are, move. This is the issue. And again, I get the psychological scares and the fear, and behind every fear is a person you want to be. I'm an acronym for fear, false evidence appearing real, that there are no fears. All there are is whatever attachment we've given to the situation that we think is going to happen, or the worst case scenario. When you reframe it and realize that complaining doesn't help get you anywhere. Complaining about your relationship, complaining about your boyfriend or your girlfriend, complaining about your diet or your nutritional plan, complaining about whatever it is you're doing doesn't move you forward. Changing the way you see it can move you forward. If you don't like the training program you're on, you either reframe it because you know it's the best one you need to do right now to get you to your end goal, or you do a different training program. If you don't like the foods you're eating right now, you reframe it to, I need to eat this way to look a certain way for this point, date, or event, or I change my nutritional strategy and go with somebody else or design a new plan that I can stick to long term. You need to reframe the way you see it. Combining that and piggybacking that with a quote that Buddha said better, if you can't be happy at a destination, how are you going to be? If you can't be happy on the journey, how will you be happy at the destination? That, in combination with not complaining about the things that are going wrong and realizing that when you own something, you can change it, and you realize that complaining doesn't get you closer to it, and complaining for complaining's sake doesn't get you anywhere fucking closer to it, your whole life can change. And I have on my phone, I literally have it on my screen right now, 07:58 is the time. And then underneath it is a no complaining zone with the sign. And since I've came back from Marathon de Sable, I've tried to continue that, where I don't complain about things. And if I do, I try and catch myself and realize, nope, negative state, that's not helping, it's not moving the situation forward. Unless the person you're complaining to can actually help you. That is the next question. Ask yourself, can this person actually help me or change my situation or circumstance? Am I just giving out to this person about a bad day? And sometimes you need to vent. There's a difference between sometimes you actually just need to vent because you've had a bad day and just get it off your chest. My best advice for girls listening to this is, if you're doing it with your boyfriend, guys are hardwired, to the majority of guys, to think practically and try and solve problems. It's just the part of our brain that's more active than in most females, again, from an evolutionary standpoint. Guys will try and solve problems. So if you say you've had a shitty day at work because Jane was being a bitch, we're going to try and answer ways on practical solutions for how you can deal with Jane. You may not want a practical solution. So just a little bit of word for the wise, for guys listening and for girls listening. One of my closest friends said to me once, and I've since done this with any romantic relationship I've ever been involved in, and I do it with my female friends, is when they're giving out for guys, where your girlfriend's giving out, or your sister's giving out, or your friend is giving out, just ask them before they start, do you want a practical solution, or do you just want to be heard? And I swear to God, I felt like someone gave me the fucking winning lottery numbers using that piece of advice. Because what would happen is when I would have my sister or a girl I was seeing or a girl, a friend of mine who was a girl, complaining about a situation, I would go automatically into practical tip mode and offer ways to help. And it would design, it would end up disconnecting me more from that person because they just wanted to be heard. And girls that are listening realize that if you, we're not fucking smart. Guys aren't as smart as you. We're not as good emotionally for the majority, not in all cases, but for the majority. When you have a problem and a bad day, if you frame it that way before you start and go, look, John, look, Sean, look, Patrick, I'm going to give out now. I've had a really bad day. I don't really want any practical advice. I just want to vent. The amount of increased communication you'll both have and the stronger your relationship will be because of that one thing has been game changing for me. It's just a side note that came to mind. That can help a lot. And communication is key. I have a big philosophy in my business with all the people I work with and personal relationships as well, as over communicate, because the more you communicate, you messages don't get lost in translation. That is game changing. So you can complain and have a place to vent. Just make sure you frame it up and put the contextual frame on it at the beginning that you don't want advice, you just want to vent, because we will go into automatic practical tip giving mode otherwise. And that doesn't help because you just want to vent. And sometimes guys are the same, but in most cases it tends to be gender dominant just because of the emotional aspect, and that hardwired of the way your physiology is as a female tends to be more emotionally designed. It's why you're better with people than most guys. And again, hardwired in evolutionary psychology and evolutionary biology. So can this person actually help me or change my situation or circumstance? And then the last one I'm going to talk on for today before I break this up into another part, are my actions mapping to my ambition? Are my actions mapping to my ambition? This thought process can allow you to stop fooling yourself into what you're doing every day is actually getting you to the end goal. And I had to really catch this, if I'm completely honest. This is where my being busy versus being productive thought process came, because my actions weren't mapping to my ambition. The difference between being productive and being busy are very different things. Being busy is not having a lot of time. You can't, because you're constantly doing things. Being productive is getting a lot done. It may not be in a long time scale, but you're getting a lot done. You're being productive versus being busy. In 2016, when my business was really starting to explode, I struggled with that busy versus productive. I would be busy all day long. I was up at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. and I was working until I went to bed. And I'd go to bed at the end of the day, I'm like, I got nothing fucking done. I was like, I've been responding, I've been doing emails all day and messages all day, and I've got nothing done. And I'm like, I've got all these aspirations and goals for my business and helping more people and serving more people. My actions every day aren't mapping to this ambition. I also had to do the same thing in relationships, which is the weakest area of my life, because for me, the control aspect of how do I deserve what I want has helped me a lot in this area, because you're 100% in relationships, still only 50%, because you're one of two people. You're one of two halves. And for a long period of my life, my end goal of what I wanted to achieve in a romantic relationship and a partner, my actions weren't mapping to that. You can't go out on Saturday nights and hook up randomly with every hot person you see, or scrolling and randomly going on Tinder dates with people who you know there's no long-term future with, and expect to have the love of your life at the other side. Your actions just aren't mapping to your ambition. It can be the same in your job. If you want to climb that ladder or get your business off the ground, or you want to have more money in your bank account, if your actions aren't mapping to your ambition, you're not going to get there. And there's nothing wrong with not having the ambition in other areas of your life. It may be way, success for each person is completely subjective. My version and vision of success is maybe completely subjective from yours. My version of success is having enough money that I never have to worry about paying my mortgage or paying bills, getting up every morning and feel like I'm tap dancing to work, where I can't believe I get to do what I do, spending time with my mum, my inner circle, my daughter, and not being consumed by, well, I need to do this, I need to do that. and having that mental chatter shut down so that I don't have that outward perceived success and inner turmoil in my own mind just because I can't switch my brain off. That's what success looks like for me. It may be completely different for you. You may have the external things. You may want the car and the nice clothes, and there's nothing wrong with that if that's what's truly driving your success and that's what's truly driving your happiness for the things that you want. I had to do it the hard way. I had to get the car, I had to get the money, I had to get the girl, I had to get all these things that I thought I wanted because this is what my blueprint of success looked like, because this is what the societal norms of success told me. You need to have the good job, a lot of money, a nice car, a nice house, a pretty girlfriend, and that way you'll be successful. I did that. And I love the Benjamin Franklin quote that experience is a fool's school, or experience is a foolish way to learn, but fools will learn in no other. I think I've butchered that quote, but that's how I had to learn. I had to experience it. And one quote that I won't butcher is, smart people learn from their mistakes and the really sharp ones learn from the mistakes of others. I had to do it. I had to get the amazing physique. I had to get the car. I had to get the money in my bank account. I had to get all these things that I thought, quote unquote, would make me successful, which effectively I thought would make me happy, because I had this fucked up confusion that success and happiness were the same thing. They're not. You become happy and then you can become successful, which has been my new reframe, because they don't. External things that I thought would make me successful didn't make me happy. But for a long time, I had this foolish opinion or foolish thought process that they were the same. And I was chasing after the wrong thing. And when your actions are mapping to your ambition and what success looks like for me, every day I try and move one step closer to it, or I make sure that my map and my internal compass is pointing in that direction and I'm walking in that direction. Just don't fool yourself. It doesn't matter what your ambition is in whatever area of your life, but your actions need to map to that ambition. If they don't you dare complain about not having what you want. And I have to catch myself fucking regularly when I'm giving out and complain to myself and have the inner talk on, why don't I have this? You don't have it because you don't fucking deserve it. You haven't become that person yet, and your actions haven't been mapping to your ambition. You don't deserve to have that yet. You haven't become that person. You haven't made the decision. That inner self-talk. And again, I can sound psychotic when I talk about it, but again, I don't really give a shit what people think, so apologies. But that inner talk, self-talk, that's what goes on in my mind. These questions just help bring them to the forefront. And they're uncomfortable questions to ask, because nothing good comes from your comfort zone. You need to lean into the discomfort of some of these questions and get real with it and be honest. It doesn't matter. Like, you can fool everybody else and you can fool the world, but if your actions aren't mapping to your ambition, none of it matters. You can let everybody think that you're doing all the right things and that you're super busy or you're super productive or you're super successful, but you fucking know. Like, you know when you're not doing the right things. Just get real with yourself and be okay with that, because there's nothing wrong with you not doing it. Just don't be disappointed when you don't hit that end goal, because you haven't been doing the things every day that led you towards it. You haven't been moving step by step. You haven't been doing rep by rep. You haven't been eating meal by meal. You haven't been doing the things that you need to do every day to make you successful or let you hit that ambition. That's fine. But you won't. That way you won't get discouraged, because you know truthfully you didn't do it. But that's not what generally happens. When you generally get real with yourself, you start to change it. You either move your bar so that it's more realistic and within a certain time frame. And I'm a believer that nothing is impossible or nothing can't be done, but the time frame may not be realistic. You may need more time to do it. And that comes down to what you do every day. Tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. Tell me what you do every day for the next year and I'll tell you where you'll be in 5 years. That is actions mapping to ambition. Just don't fool yourself. And hopefully putting these together, and I'm going to break this into two parts, putting these together with some of the other questions will help move you forward. So I'll leave it at this one. Am I being emotional or rational right now? How do I deserve what I want? What makes me happy and what makes me unhappy? Can this person actually help or change my situation or circumstance? And are my actions mapping to my ambition? They are questions that can help move everything forward, all areas. And I'll leave today's episode on that. So stay tuned for part two. And I hope you got a lot of value from this one. Again, very different type of podcast episode. A lot more into the inner workings of my mind, and I'm aware how psychotic I sound sometimes. And I listen back, I'm like, oh God, why did you put that in the fucking podcast? But hopefully it helps. I'm aware your mess becomes your message. And sometimes these inner dialogues of just thinking out loud, they support me when I listen back. So I hope they support you. So hit me up on Instagram, let me know what you think. And stay tuned next week for part two.
Quick message before you head off. Just letting you know my best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available on Audible and all major audiobook apps. If you're like me and love listening to books while you travel or work out, be sure to go to audible.co.uk or audible.com to check out the audio version of The Fitness Mindset. You can listen to a 3-minute sample on there, or you can download the full book. Also, last thing before you leave, if you try Clean Cut Meals, the sponsors of today's episode, be sure to enter the code BKF at the checkout to get your 20% off your first order. Clean Cut Meals are doing all my food for my next adventure challenge coming early next year. I'll be announcing more about that during next month's podcast, and I'm just waiting on medical clearance. So stay tuned for that. And remember, code BKF at the checkout for 20% off your first order. Catch you all next time.